Okay. I didn't feel like writing anything today. I got to the train station a little later than expected anyway, and didn't have as much time to sit there and start writing, and again, I didn't really feel like it anyway, so I figured I'd just do an unprepared audio blog like I did those first couple of times. I don't have any topic prepared, which I guess means that I will be speaking less at length than I did in the previous two audio blogs. Again, I'm not sure what I want to talk about, but I often start my written blogs not knowing what I want to write about, so maybe I'll come up with something, or maybe this will just be me boringly discussing the fact that I don't have anything to discuss. I guess that's sort of funny and meta in its way anyway. I'm still quite irritated by the fact that Mark Zuckerberg, whom I often call Fuckerberg, decided to take the term meta as the name of his company and abscond with the term metaverse to be the name of his, I guess, his online virtual reality interactive thing. Not the hugest fan of such virtual reality things, partly because I think that the technology is just not there yet, but also because I don't know that it really adds much to anything. Also, there are potential pitfalls. I discuss them in my short story, Penal Colony, which you can get standalone on Kindle for 99 cents. It may even be on Kindle Unlimited still. I don't remember whether I put it there. Or you can get it as part of my collection of stories, Dr. Alessar's Cabinet of Curiosities, which is available on Kindle and in paperback and in hardback. That collection has most of the short stories that I've written and put up on Kindle standalone. It also has one story in it that only appears in the collection. That's In the Shade, which is the last story. It's sort of a chronological story thing. Almost, not exactly. The first story is certainly the oldest story. It's a story called House Guests that I wrote way back in the day, I think when I was in high school. I guess it had to be in high school because I think that was the short story that I originally entered into the competition for the National Council of Teachers of English Award. I won one of the two awards for Michigan, so I guess it was a pretty good story for a high school student. Again, the last one was the latest story completed. It wasn't the latest story started. I had started In the Shade before writing, I think even writing Penal Colony, but certainly before writing some of the stories in the collection. The middle story, I think I put it in the middle, is Solitaire, which is a very dark story. Maybe the darkest story I've ever written. And that's one of those weird things where I was in a perfectly good mood when I wrote it. I was visiting the young woman who would eventually I would marry. And she was working in a summer job and had a project she was staying up all night for. And so I kept her company since I didn't have anything to do during the day. And while I was keeping her company, I had a spiral-bound notebook, and I wrote that short story in it, one sitting. And it wasn't changed much between its initial writing and its final version, although there were some edits for quality, mainly. I actually only found that short story going through my old Yahoo emails for attachments. I was looking for a different thing. I was looking for a Harry Potter fan fiction that I wrote that is, alas, lost to me. It was a silly thing, but I wanted to just reread it because I found it kind of fun. But I did find Solitaire and saved it and downloaded it. That was nice, I guess. Although, again, it is an extremely dark story, as you might guess, A, from the title, Solitaire. I used to play a lot of Solitaire at the time with regular cards, real cards, not on computers. And I thought it was an interesting metaphor kind of thing for a person who is sort of degenerating and falling apart in a very severe depression. Yeah, again, it doesn't end happily. I think I end with the words, "It's a stupid game. You play it by yourself. There's no point to it. You almost always lose or quit before you've finished. Life's like that, I suppose." I know that's the actual last sentence. "Life's like that, I suppose," of the story. It's, I think, maybe the shortest story in that collection, but it does pack a wallop. And I know, for instance, when my now ex-wife read it for the first time, she's said, "Wow, that's a really good story. Where the heck did that come from?" I was just like, "I don't know. Where do any stories come from?" It's a bit analogous to asking where the output of a deep learning program comes from. You know, how does it produce its predictions or statements about how to recognize faces or judge protein structures or anything like that? It doesn't know any more than the programmers know. It's a matter of the weightings working with and against each other being adjusted to produce better outcomes all the time, training on the data. I've certainly read a lot of stories and written a lot of stories, and I think about them, so that's where stories come from. It doesn't explain very much as an explanation goes, but it is probably about as good an explanation as you could get, because decoding all the intricacies of the system probably be something akin to a learner's version of Laplace's demon describing all the events of the universe. For those of you who don't know, this is an entity first suggested by Laplace. He didn't call it Laplace's demon. People have subsequently called it that. But he said that if an entity of sufficient intellect and ability and knowledge were able to know the positions and momenta of every particle in the universe and to apply to them the formulas of physics, then the future as the past would be laid out for it, whole and all complete, and everything would be visible to it as a done deal. This is presuming determinism. And as others have pointed out, I think specifically Sean Carroll, that Laplace's demon wouldn't really necessarily have any understanding or certainly not bother with local explanations of things. It wouldn't describe things as brewing coffee, adding sugar and cream, letting it equilibrate and watching it cool. All of it would just be expressed in terms of the motions of the atoms involved, which in some ways is less insightful, although more knowledgeable. That's one of the reasons I like John Carroll's idea of just the idea of emergence, not as something, you know, magical, it's not, but just as a matter of there are different levels of description of things and different levels of activity. Of course, everything can be ultimately described as the interaction of fundamental forces, deterministic or otherwise, but that doesn't necessarily give you any useful insight in real life. And since none of us within the universe are ever going to be Laplace's demons, able to understand or model the universe at every scale, down to presumably to the Planck scale and the Planck time and all that other stuff. And as I've said in Lessard's conjecture or Lessard's law, which probably has been said by somebody else before, no intelligence can ever fully and completely model itself, because capacity to model always require a sophistication greater than that which is being modeled. Even a simple transistor, an AND gate or whatever, something basically producing either a 0 or a 1, requires more information to instantiate than one bit of data, obviously. I think it's obvious. If it's not, please let me know. And that will always be the case. So nothing within the universe, other than the universe itself, per se, can ever completely model every aspect of the universe. This, to me, is a bit of a barrier to concepts of the the Nick Bostrom idea of the simulation hypothesis. Other people have suggested it too, a la Matrix and so forth. The idea that if there are civilizations in the future or another universe or whatever that like to model universes that reach a technological level where they can model creatures and that those creatures can actually have life and experience, that eventually such modeled universes, which can themselves potentially contain beings that will model universes, would become more numerous than real universes. In principle, I don't see how you could ever not have at least one fundamental ground universe for things to start off in. I suppose there... Now, I don't see how there could be some kind of like loop recursion where the final level universe simulates the initial level universe and goes back in time unless you have a... If all of reality is a closed time-like loop, but you still need some reality in which the simulation takes place. But also, to me, unless they're taking shortcuts, of course, and simulating only part of the universe and only that part of the universe which is being used at the time, but that introduces other problems because in extremely complex systems, it's very difficult to predict where future things might come into conflict with previous computations that would then either need to be resolved or just get you stuck in a loop. Now, to some degree, this can be dealt with by noting that for a simulated universe, say it's, for simplicity's sake, say it's being simulated 1 second at a time, and then the whatever the local laws, the computed laws of physics, the simulated laws of physics are applied to every point in it to move forward to the next second. That wouldn't work in the universe as we see it because seconds are not universal. You know, special and general relativity, quantum mechanics, all that other stuff make things more fuzzy and complicated. But that's not really the point of the problem. You could, for instance, require years of computation or longer to simulate every given second, and those years would take place in the base universe. But nevertheless, for the beings in the simulated universe, they would only experience a second at a time. Even if it's taking some higher civilization a million years to compute every second that we experience, we still only experience a second going by, and the next second, and the next second. But how much time do the beings in this base universe have? Do they have an infinity of time? I suppose if so, they might be able to do it. But then the second level universe would have to be simulating another universe, and their computations would require at least some degree of time, probably longer than the time in the initial universe, or at least potentially so. And that would take even longer time, and you'd have nested universes each going much more slowly, or requiring much more computational power than the one in the previous universe. Unless, again, you're using shortcuts and workarounds, but those will eventually run into each other in at least some of the simulations, and I suspect in all of them eventually. Like frost crystallizing on a window. If there's two different places where the crystals start forming, eventually they run into each other, and then you get an incongruity. And there are people who even speculate that such a thing might have happened in the early part of our universe. In certain inflationary models, there would be areas where there are inhomogeneities that lead to things like cosmic strings and so forth. They may be real, but they seem like they would get in the way of computer simulations of a universe. But here's an interesting thought. If a universe is being modeled, but the universe in which it's being modeled, the base universe, is approaching heat death or some other catastrophe happens that basically breaks the computer, that modeled universe will come to an end, but it will not come to an end in the experience of the beings of the universe. They will simply stop going forward. So it's sort of like as if you're moving along and then just nothing else. You won't notice time stopping. you won't notice anything. You won't be being simulated anymore. I thought about even making a short story based on this, having a guy get this premonition that the world is coming to an end, sort of like, you know, Donnie Darko with the 6-foot bunny rabbit telling him the world is going to end in this amount of time. Though in his case, it's a bubble universe that's coming to an end. Good movie, that. But having that character sort of get a premonition of some kind that the world will end in X amount of time, and becoming convinced of it and telling people that and no one believing him, and him watching the clock expecting some catastrophe, some huge thing to happen. But then when the time comes, time just stops. And then, of course, we'd have to shift outward, sort of like what I did in my short story Paradox City, to the people simulating his universe, having decided to shut down the program, and somehow him getting a hint. Maybe one of the programmers felt bad and decided to let them know because they recognized that their simulated people actually had awareness and consciousness. And then I thought of having a second meta-level thing of ending the story without an ending, like mid-sentence, kind of to imply that even the higher-level people were also stopping because their simulators also decided to stop the simulation. I'm telling you this story idea just because I don't see myself writing any new stories unless something changes for me drastically. And I've already gone on 20 minutes now total, so I think I'll draw this to an end. I don't know if I've said anything interesting or useful or whatever, but this is just me talking. Maybe I should do this more often. If everyone likes this, please let me know. If you have any thoughts on what I've said, please let me know. If you're listening to this on YouTube, when I turn it into a video, give a thumbs up and subscribe and all that other stuff. Share it. Feel free to share the blog post too if you're listening to this on my blog. Well, you should feel free to do it either way, because you are free to do it either way. But of course, if there is determinism, you're not really free in any sense. That's another topic. Have a good day.